The Money Show.
Investment School.
Well, welcome back to The Money Show. I'm holding the fort for Bruce Whitfield. My name is Motheo Kgwaripe. Let's get insights now in our investment school. The head teacher today is Carmen Nell, economist and macro strategist at Matrix Fund Managers. And we're getting a pragmatic take on ESG investing. Carmen, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Matthew. Glad to be here.
Great to have you. There's not much that I know about ESG investing, and I'm hoping that you're going to take us through our paces here and give us some of that knowledge. But let's first start here. What is ESG in the first place before we get to the investing part?
Yes. So ESG, the E is for environment, S for social, and G for governance. And it's basically premised on sustainable and responsible investing. So those are the three pillars. The ESG sort of performance indicators are based on the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. So 17 overarching goals with 169 underlying targets. So it's actually quite complicated if you look at the detail. But if we just look at some of the sort of indicators covered in terms of the environment, it would be things like carbon emissions, air quality, water and waste management. Under social, it would be how a company manages its social capital and its human capital. So whether it's things like data security, labor practices, employee health and safety, and then governance, which I'm sure everyone in South Africa is very familiar with in terms of the numerous scandals we've had over the years, both in terms of government as well as sort of private sector and listed companies. Those would be your governance issues such as business ethics, you know, accounting standards, incidence risk management, systemic risk management, management behavior, etc. ESG is actually a very broad, overarching sort of concept that is actually quite complicated and intricate, which is, you know, part of the challenge of if you want to invest using an ESG framework.
And what brought about this form of investment? Why was there a need for an introduction of environmental social governance investing? And how different is it from impact investing?
So I'll start with that. So ESG investing still puts the financial return as the primary objective, or let's say a co-primary focus alongside the social return. So it's important in that regard is you don't want to give up too much of your financial return and solely focus on ESG. As I mentioned, it's quite broad-based and it's not necessarily explicitly measured because it, you know, you can see it's quite a complicated overarching framework. Impact investing puts your social return as the primary objectives, and it should be a very measurable, clear objective, whether it's something, for example, like investing in a specific water technology or in a specific hospital or a specific, you know, let's say vaccines. So it's clear what you're investing in. You've got a specific target, but then your financial return, even though it's a secondary return, obviously it still must be positive. So you're still taking the financial return into consideration. So it's not like philanthropy where the social return is the only thing that matters. And then, I mean, it had quite a convoluted start in the sense that sort of if you think back, well, 1970 was actually the first World Earth Day. In 1992, that was the first United Nations framework on the Convention on Climate Change. So it's climate change was the primary instigator for the concept of ESG. 1997, we had the Kyoto Protocol. 2000, the UN Global Compact. In 2011, we had the Sustainability Standards Board set up. And then 2015 is the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, which sort of underlie the whole ESG framework. But you could also argue that alongside these regulatory and UN developments, we had various events in financial markets and in the world that sort of spurred ESG. So if you think in the early 2000s, we had the Enron Arthur Andersen scandal. Yes. We had the global financial crisis, which focused very much on sort of the consequences of governance as well as inequality. So the social part, we had the COVID pandemic, again, focusing there on climate change. If you recall, when things locked down, how the air cleared up, and the rivers cleared up and, you know, the penguins were walking everywhere. We also had, I mean, over the last few years, various global warming events, wildfires, droughts, floods. And then this year alone, we had the Russia-Ukraine war. I mean, that's a great example where sort of people questioned the governance side of owning Russian assets.
And then most countries pulled out, yeah.
Yeah, and S&P, and in May, S&P excluded, for example, Tesla from its ESG index while keeping ExxonMobil in the index. So that sparked quite a debate about, okay, what is the focus then of the E or the S or the G? And that's why I say it's such a broad concept in that it's very difficult to apply the E, the S, and the G equally to all companies. And sort of you sort of have to try and tease out what your primary objective is. And I think that's what makes ESG quite difficult from an individual investor perspective to focus on. And on the institutional side to incorporate it into a process.
So if I get you correctly, ESG then allows you to do your due diligence on a company completely in terms of social governance or environmental stance of the company before you put your money in it.
Yes, I think what's difficult, or maybe what's part of how the ESG is evolving, is generally people look at the ESG pillars, so environmental, social, and governance, as what is that as a risk to the business in terms of, or the company's business, its operations, its profitability, whereas increasingly it's also shifting to saying, okay, what is the role of the company in terms of its ESG footprint? And I think is important, because that is sort of, you know, the feel good factor as an investor that you get from investing in a company that's making a big difference. Whereas the traditional way of looking at ESG is to say, okay, we've got all these different variables and factors. Say, okay, what is it? What risks do these factors, say, global warming, what risk would that pose to my company? Which, you know, it might be an agricultural company. So obviously, if they're going to be increasing droughts, it'll reduce profitability. The output would become highly uncertain. So the cost of capital for that company should be higher. You know, would I be willing to invest in that company in the longer run? It's not necessarily no, because maybe they're very good at technology, you know, so maybe they're very good at GMO technology, more drought resistant strains of wheat or whatever it is they invest in. So then there are trade-offs. It's not as simple, in my mind, certainly, a yes, no, to say, oh, we're investing in this, because, you know, there are three pillars and lots of underlying factors. So, I mean, the primary thing I would add is to say, I mean, governance should be a given. You know, you shouldn't invest in a company where governance isn't rated very, very highly, because being an individual or as an asset manager, because as an asset manager, you have a fiduciary duty to your client, who's the individual investor ultimately, to ensure that you invest in a good company. So a good company is usually one that has good management, good governance. And then from there, you look at the E and the S.
The E and the S, Carmen, now we're going to hold that conversation for now. Of course, class is in session in our investment school, and we'll pick up on that conversation after this.
The Money Show. Investment School.
We continue with our class now. A head teacher, Carmen Nell, economist and macro strategist at Matrix Fund Managers, telling us all about environmental, social, and governance factors and how they affect investing. And we were talking about, you know, how ESG can be used in terms of investment and some ROI examples that we've seen throughout the years. Can you give us some of those?
Pardon, just repeat the question. It wasn't clear.
Oh, I was speaking about how ESG is being used to invest in companies and whether there's been great examples of return on investment using this approach.
Actually, okay, so that is what's a key debate at the moment is, and you'd have seen in recent various sort of media publications, ESG actually getting a bit of backlash because it actually has not delivered in terms of, let's say, outperformance. A great example is really over the last, let's say, 2 to 3 quarters, is where ESG funds arguably haven't underperformed necessarily, but you know, they've been down alongside the general global market volatility and weakness. But a great example is where they, for example, now underperformed these, call them sin companies, in particular, things, like oil companies, coal companies. And that really is, because the commodity price rally that came or stemmed in part from the Russia-Ukraine war boosted non-ESG company returns, the likes of commodities. So I think what one should be careful of is to assume that over the shorter term, that there will be great examples of very specific ESG companies, again, because it's quite complicated. Certainly in the listed space, you've got various companies involved in various aspects of whether it's environmental, social. I mean, everyone's involved in governance, so that's important. All companies, certainly listed, are required to adhere to the King codes. But there is certainly some backlash that maybe expectations were too high of the returns that were meant to be delivered by ESG companies, whereas actually as an investor, you need to think about ESG investing in terms of long-run sustainability of positive returns rather than necessarily outperformance. And that sort of goes back to one of the sort of unintended consequences of taking an ESG approach, not so much as a single investor, because obviously you as a single investor will not have that big a market impact. But if the asset management industry as a whole takes a view that, okay, we are no longer going to invest in fossil fuel companies, what will then happen is obviously, or let's say a big part of the asset management fraternity decide not to invest in fossil fuel companies. They will sell their holdings of fossil fuel companies, which means those companies will become cheap and attractive to other investors. And obviously the cheaper or the lower the rating on a company, then there's more upside in terms of future returns. Whereas then you as the ESG investor are effectively giving up that potential return. So it's an example of where, you know, you've got important trade-offs in terms of, as I said, the social return versus the financial return. Think of ourselves as individuals, you know, the way we can access it, we can invest directly in companies and do our own or try to do our own homework on the ESG basis of which companies we should own and not own. Or what we do is we have a pension fund, and pension funds are increasingly using ESG in their own allocations. And obviously the managers they use, for example, we've got pension fund clients at Matrix Fund Managers. We have to do ESG reporting for them on a quarterly basis. We've got ESG, ESG is part of our investment framework. And sort of we still have to deliver financial returns to our clients and therefore cannot only look at ESG at the cost of all else, because obviously you and I are only going to retire in 20 or 30 years. And in the end, we need a return, but alongside that, we need the returns to have been sustainable so that we can retire comfortably.
And what are some of those challenges incorporating ESG, Carmen, in terms of investing? What can you get and what are the trade-offs in using ESG?
Yeah. So I think that certainly the challenge is very much because, again, if we look at all the information and data and indicators underlying ESG, it would be the quality and availability of the data. Often that then relies on the disclosures that companies make. Now, you know, we've got, for example, if you want to list on the JSE, you know, you've got to adhere to the King Code of Governance, and there are a lot of required disclosures you have to make. But currently, so the G is covered, listing requirements, but the E and the S not yet explicitly. So as an individual, you know, it's going to be quite a lot of work to get that data to make a sound ESG-based decision. Often also, you know, ESG could be quite subjective. So, you know, it's not like an accounting standard that, you know, it's in the name accounting standard, so it's highly standardized, and there might be tweaks between countries or jurisdictions. So ESG is still a very complicated, very subject process, and ideally it should be more streamlined and standardized, and I'm sure that's coming. And then obviously, given all the extra work that needs to go into it, you have to have additional resources applied to the process. So that includes people, systems, data, and that basically means the cost of investing then in an ESG company, because you've got to do all this work, would then obviously go up. And it's also quite challenging, just if you think about across, say, environmental. I mean, how do you compare a bank's environmental score to an energy company's environmental score? I mean, you can't not invest in the energy company just because it has a bad score on environmental, because its primary thing is energy. You know, its primary business line or operations would be in energy. Then you'd rather have to say, okay, I'm not going to penalize the energy company, but what I can do then is, okay, what are the risks to my investment? It could be a carbon tax, being imposed,
fossil fuels
or,
and things like that.
You know, but at the same time, okay, I can invest in the company and use my vote to help this company transition. So you'll often hear equity managers tell you, you know, about walking with the company, or it's a journey they're taking with the company on this ESG process. But it is one way in which you can use your influence, is to actually be a shareholder. So again, so we at Matrix have our ESG policies. You know, we are signatories to the Code of Responsible Investing in South Africa, as well as to the UN's Principles for Responsible Investing. But for example, what we don't do negative screening. The other sort of consequence, if you do negative screening, as I mentioned before, is there's a potential return or alpha that you could be giving up. But then also the trade-off or a spillover of negative screening could be that you reduce your investment universe. So then you end up with maybe with a too concentrated investment universe, less diversification. And again, given this, the size of our savings pool in South Africa, which is, you know, 8 to 10 trillion rand. You know, if you keep excluding companies and it's a broader theme amongst the savings pool, then, you know, there's a lot of concentration risk that the industry as a whole, ends up with. So it is quite a complicated.
And just wrapping up your lesson on the ESG investing, how can we apply ESG in the South African context, for instance?
Yes, so I think what is important in South Africa is we are an emerging market. So yes, we do have very high emissions for the size of our economy. But then our challenge is really to balance the E with the S. So we've started to sort out the G, certainly when it comes to the government side, which is arguably where our weak spot was. And I think their regulators have started to do a lot to facilitate how we can sort of co-manage the E with the S, and that really is via ultimately infrastructure. And I think crucially there, things like the just transition, so how we move away from Eskom and its coal-fired power stations to more renewables, can unlock a lot of investment infrastructure capex opportunities in South Africa. It could also then, through the investment, create jobs, but in the longer run, also improve our potential growth, which could lead to job creation and then address our social constraints. So again, we know we have very high unemployment.
Yeah.
We need to work on our public health care. And ultimately what we need is we need much stronger growth to enable job creation, because already we know that there are too many people reliant on government in terms of social support via the grant system. And that actually that's how we sort of co-invest to get the E in the S, so in the environmental aspects as well as our social responsibilities improving at the same time.
And that was our head teacher, Carmen Nell, economist and macro strategist at Matrix Fund Managers, in our investment school this week.